Warren reference works here at Fresh Air. It not only has basic biographical information on each actor, writer, producer, or director, but offers critical observations of that person's work. Thompson describes his book as personal, opinionated, and obsessive. He cautions that within nearly every entry there are things that may be startling in a biographical dictionary. The sharp expression of personal taste, jokes, digressions, insults, and eulogies. The first edition of Thompson's biographical dictionary was published 25 years ago. A new edition has recently been published. Thompson was born in London and now lives in San Francisco. He's a regular contributor to the New York Times, Salon, Film Comment, and the London Independent. He's also the author of three novels and a biography of producer David O. Selznick. Terry spoke with Thompson last December. He writes that his favorite actress is Angie Dickinson, though, he says, many of his readers don't understand that assessment. Let's start with a film clip from the 1959 film Rio Bravo, starring John Wayne as sheriff and Angie Dickinson as a dance hall entertainer.
Where are you going?
Downstairs.
You better not.
Why had I better not?
Because I'm still sheriff. You wear those things in public, I'll arrest you.
Oh, John T. I've waited so long for you to say that. I thought you were never... You have the funniest way of saying things. Just when I think you're going to say one thing, you say something else.
Get those darn things off. I'll wait outside.
No. You don't have to go. I can use the screen. Besides, I want you to stay here because the other thing is all over now, isn't it? I'm trying to hurry, but I'm all thumbs. What I had to go through, put on these tights, ask a lot of questions, start to walk out, I thought you were never going to say it.
Say what?
That you loved me.
I said I'd arrest you.
It means the same thing, you know that. You just won't say it.
There are many people I have known and many women I have known who have found my adoration for Angie Dickinson far-fetched. They're not sure whether I'm teasing or whether I really mean it, and I'm here to tell you that I do mean it. I think that in the 1950s particularly, and in the 1960s, she was an extraordinary actress, and I'm deeply fond of her. I've never met her, but everything I say about her is sincere and heartfelt. I think everything in the book is heartfelt, although sometimes I think one needs to tease people a bit. And I always understood that saying Angie Dickinson was a great actress would make people laugh. But laughter sometimes is a prelude to thought.
Now, Cary Grant, you've described him as the most fascinating male personality in pictures. Why do you give him that prized spot?
Well, it's a complicated thing. I'll be as brief as I can about it. I think essentially it comes to this, that Grant could go from lightness and humor and charm and being incredibly attractive to being dark, secretive, selfish, unpleasant. And he could do it in a moment. He could do it in a beat. And I think in a way it's that kind of ease of transition that makes the most interesting people in films, to do it without going through immense antics of acting with quotes around it, but just to let your being shift. And for years, Grant was regarded as simply a movie star. I think, again, people have come to realize that in so many ways, he's a very uneasy figure. We sort of take for granted now that he was very uneasy sexually. I think he was very uneasy with his fame. I think he was uneasy with being a hero and all of those things. And in his best work, and that's often the work for people like Hitchcock and Hawks, because he did his best with the great directors, I think you see that really volatile, uneasy personality.
I'm going to ask you to turn to the entry for the director, James Toback, the director and screenwriter. And I'm asking you to do this because he is a friend of yours. And for our listeners who don't know his movies include Fingers and The Pickup Artist. Name some other of his movies.
Harvard Man was the most recent, black and white, Exposed, Love and Money, The Big Bang, Two Girls and a Guy.
Good. So this is you writing about somebody who's a good friend of yours.
Yes.
But as we know, as we've heard, you write very opinionated, critical entries for everybody in your biographical dictionary. So read us an excerpt of what you've done for James Toback, your friend.
Dear Jim, you may not know it, but you are the best friend I feel obliged to include in this book. That may be a wretched position for both of us. You are also one of the friends I most value in life. I then go on and I quote what was an original review of his first film, Fingers, which opened in 78, in which I reviewed as critic on the Real Paper in Boston. And now, picking up. Anyway, our friendship began a few days after this review ran, and it lasts, I hope. Have you known or guessed that I've never liked anything of yours quite as much, or nearly as much, since? Have we betrayed each other? Is it possible for a movie maker and a critic to be friends?
Well, let me ask you that question. Is it possible for a critic and a movie maker to be friends?
It's extraordinarily difficult, and it requires enormous tolerance and openness on both parts. And I would have to say that on Jim's part, and Jim and I haven't spoken for a few months, and I think he knows it's because I didn't like Harvard Man. So again, I'm sending a kind of letter to him over the air. I think it depends upon his generosity, and to me he has been an extraordinary, compulsive friend, someone I could never dream of giving up. But it's very, very difficult if you're a critic, because sooner or later the critic is going to offend the filmmaker, I think, and vice versa. And in the decades over which I've done this book, I've come to know many more people in the book. When I began the book, I don't think I had met more than two or three people who were in the book. I've probably met a couple of hundred now who are in the book. And some of them don't talk to me anymore. Some of them have become even friendlier, and I have to wonder whether that's because I happen to like them. It puts friendship to a very, very great test. But I do think that anyone in the arts knows this dilemma, and you have to make up your mind how far flattery and the critical spirit, how much those two things mean to you. And I try always to tell people what I think about their films.
You know, Todd Haynes has a new movie that I think is very good called Far From Heaven, and it's an homage to the movies of Douglas Sirk, who made the movies Magnificent Obsession, All That Heaven Allows, Written on the Wind, Imitation of Life. You have an interesting entry on Douglas Sirk in your biographical dictionary of film. Would you talk a little bit about what you see as Douglas Sirk's style and importance?
Well, Sirk was a very interesting figure. He had come out of German theater, and he came to America in the late 30s, and he gradually found his way to Universal, where in the 1950s he made a series of very successful what are called women's pictures, pictures with Rock Hudson, Jane Wyman, people like that in them. He was a great stylist. He loved color, he loved decor, he loved camera movement. And those people who just love film style for film style's sake adore Sirk and were in raptures, as I was when Far From Heaven unpeeled on the screen, because it isn't just a homage. It's as if Todd Haynes has become Douglas Sirk almost for a moment. It's just breathtakingly beautiful. The colors in the film are put together with a kind of boldness that really no one since Circle, Michael Powell, has dared to do.
We usually use the word melodrama in a very dismissive way, like, oh, it's just a melodrama. In your entry for Cirque, you sing the praises of melodrama, and you write, long live melodrama, and let us stress the quality of Douglas Cirque. What do you think of as melodrama? Like, what does melodrama mean to you, and what was his approach to it? Yeah, go ahead.
I'll tell you what melodrama is. Melodrama is going in out of the daylight, paying money to sit in the dark, packed in by strangers so that you feel you can't get out, in front of a screen the size of an ocean liner, where the screen is filled with a tear dropping from a woman's blue eye down to her red mouth. That's melodrama. It's in the nature of the movies. It's sitting in front of a screen where you know that quicker than you can close your eyes, the image can change from, say, the one I've just described, to an image of a knife tearing down that woman's cheek. It's the basic melodramatic condition of not knowing what's going to happen next and longing to find out. And so long as that lives, movies will live. When people feel they've seen it all before and therefore are not surprised, are not shocked, not delighted, not moved, and maybe we're there already, that's when movies are in danger of fading away, I think.
Film critic David Thompson. He's the author of The Biographical Dictionary of Film. A new edition was recently published. Our interview was first broadcast in December of last year. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Julian Hersfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Sue Spolin directed the show. WHYY's executive producer of national radio programming is Elizabeth Perez Luna. Our theme music was composed by Joel Forrester and performed by the Microscopic Septet. For Terry Gross, I'm David Biancooley.